The United States has decades of experience and invested trillions of dollars to protect our country from the conventional threat of war. But as we near possibly the most consequential presidential election of our history, are we prepared for an unconventional threat?
We're speaking with Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. He's a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, among other committees. We'll be discussing the evolving role of the Supreme Court and the role of dark money in our politics. Senator, thanks for being with us.
It's wonderful to be with you. Thank you for having me.
We're interested in talking about the road forward, and I think that there's two elements to be discussed. One is between these days in November and January 20th, 2021, and then beyond. Do you have any lingering concerns about what might happen between now and January 2021?
You know, I think when somebody is unstable and vindictive and unprincipled, as Trump is our president, and under the pressure of having been defeated, there's always a danger that something unexpected and awful transpires. But in terms of the election being run away with, I think that the catastrophic failure, I mean, to the point of almost dark comedy humiliation of the litigation efforts and the increasing signals from Republicans that it's over and that they're ready to acknowledge the Biden administration, and the strong signals coming out of some of the states that were supposed to, you know, change unfaithful electors for faithful electors and so forth. I think we're probably past those concerns, at least. When you put Rudy Giuliani in charge of serious litigation, you're not off to a very good start. He spent too much time on talk shows and is used to the standard of proof and conduct that a right-wing talk show will tolerate. But turning up in court has been a catastrophe for him. And as lawyers have seen what the factual background is for stuff that they agreed to say in pleadings, they've backed off the pleadings, they've left the cases. I mean, it really is kind of a spectacle of rats leaving a sinking ship. And so I don't see the likelihood of this getting to the Supreme Court. Moreover, I think the Supreme Court still has a black eye from Bush v. Gore, and they've got three black eyes from the rotten way that Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Barrett got onto the court. So I think as an institution and as individual justices, a lot of them are going to be very cautious about singeing their fingers on political stuff that is highly visible and is kind of demonstrably out of their lane. So I think Trump's idea that he's appointed these judges and therefore they're going to rule for him when it comes to this particularly flagrant issue is misplaced.
There's a lot of concern about what Trump has been doing in the Defense Department and in other security sections. What's your perspective on what's going on there? And does he have any guardrails whatsoever to thwart what he might try to do between now and January 20th?
Well, the worst case scenario is that he's taking down and removing guardrails that might prevent him from doing something really unhinged between now and January 20th. I would hope that there's enough institutional integrity within the Defense Department that even if you get rid of, say, Secretary Esper, there's still enough institutional integrity to slow down truly dangerous and misguided things that he tries to do. There was a process or a caution, whatever you'd call it, in place at the end of the Nixon presidency, where the Defense Department had sort of set up a firewall in case a despondent, depressed, and drunken President Nixon did something that was completely untoward. And there may very well be an informal process like that happening in the Pentagon among a lot of the career people. I don't know.
Not wanting to sound naive, a lot of what one wants to believe can start to happen under a Biden administration. But then one goes back to the question of where the Republicans and the Republican leadership stand.
I think if you want to understand Mitch McConnell, it's actually a pretty simple equation. What do his big donors want? And what will help his caucus get reelected? The members who are up in the next election and are in contested races. If the big donors feel that what the president is doing would be catastrophic to interests of theirs, Mitch would be highly responsive to that. And if he thought that allowing the president to do something would be damaging to the prospects of his 2022 class of senators, I think he'd be responsive to that as well.
Senator Whitehouse, we've lived with this very strange period of the Donald Trump presidency. Sometimes it seemed as if our constitutional norms, the things we all expect to happen, the way things are supposed to work, the way things do work, are no longer going to be the way things work in the future of our country. What kinds of reforms do you think we need to put into place to protect us from the risks of someone, anyone, trying to replace our system of democracy with one man authoritarian rule? After all, it's happened in Russia, it's happened in China, it's happened in a number of other countries. Do you think that we've seen a real risk of that under the Trump presidency? Or do you think that the idea that a president could turn into a president for life is overblown, and that the system has demonstrated its resilience and strength?
I think the system has demonstrated some resilience and strength, but I don't think that the risk is overblown because, you know, the boundaries move a little bit when they're stretched and pushed. And another round of pressure may cause them to collapse. I do think that people in the Defense Department, like Colonel Vindman, who stood up when he saw something very wrong happening, are a signal that the system protects itself a little bit and from that kind of abuse. But look what happened to him. So I hope that the Biden administration finds a way to bring him back with honor into his career, to send the counter message to doing the decent thing gets you fired. Certainly you've seen in the Flynn case and in others, career people at the Department of Justice either quit a case or quit the department entirely in protest for political decision-making. And I think that has sent a message of caution back up to the political operatives in those organizations. But you never know when when the elastic is going to snap. And so I think back to your original question, both things are true. The strength of government has been somewhat confirmed, the resilience that we intend a career civil service and military service to have has shown some strength, but it's been sorely tested and there have been some significant abuses notwithstanding that pressure. And who knows when the elastic snaps.
If you look at the firing of all the inspector generals and you look at the removal of all of the political appointees who resisted President Trump, including even in his last days just before the election at the Defense Department, you look at the takeover of the Justice Department and its politicization by Attorney General Barr, all of this looks like a systematic attack on what are supposed to be neutral institutions that protect everybody impartially. What can we do to make sure it can't happen again?
So to me, the most important thing to do is to get rid of dark money in our political system, to make it more transparent so that the citizen is no longer being played for a chump and actually can see who the players are in the political drama of our country. And I think a lot of what has gone wrong has behind the curtain, very powerful interests pulling strings. Clearly, there has always been an anti-science component within the Republican Party that doesn't think vaccines are safe, that doesn't think the sun revolves around, the earth revolves around the sun, that thinks that the earth is flat, that wears tinfoil on its heads because of, you know, radio waves beaming in on them, that doesn't believe in evolution. But that was always a real fringe. The tobacco industry denying the harms of its product, and then the handoff of a lot of that apparatus to the fossil fuel industry to deny the harms of its product, put behind the whole science suspicion, science denial fringe, a massive, massive, very well-funded and motivated new industrial enterprise. And that has blown up to the point where now, I mean, people are contesting all sorts of things that are really incontestable, but climate science is really part of the worst of it. And you can say on the one hand, wow, isn't this unfortunate that all these crazy Republicans believe this ridiculous, non-factual stuff? But if you end your inquiry there, what do you do about that? Just try to, you know, talk loudly to them, or, you know, what's going on with it? If you understand that an enormous amount of climate denial was deliberately manufactured by big special interests, and that they did a really good job hiding that it was them behind, I don't know, maybe 60 different front groups, and, you know, laundering their money through groups that remove the fingerprints of who the donor is. It's a very, very complex scheme. It's basically like a covert op that a hostile nation would run within another hostile nation to degrade its civil capabilities and to degrade its strength, except that in this case, it was run by an industry against our own government. And when you see that that is what's behind this, suddenly you, oh, I get it. That's pretty easy to solve. You just make sure that all this money is transparent and you know that it can be traced back to the fossil fuel industry. And then everybody in America can get the joke of what's happening around them. And the industry itself is discouraged from continuing to play because they now have to be accountable and responsible for their behavior. And I think there are a number of areas in which some of the really extreme and unpredictable and norm-shattering behavior leads directly back to a big motivated party hiding behind the curtain. I do think that the Trump effect of Republicans often spinelessly being unwilling to oppose him because they were afraid of a tweet. They saw the Bob Corker, Jeff Flake examples and basically threw in the towel and said, whatever you want, no matter how crazy. That dynamic changes dramatically when Trump is out of office and President Biden is the person in charge. Now, Trump is still going to be a president in exile. He's still going to try to control the party. But clearly, he'll be a diminished force one way or the other. And so I think there'll be more of a capability of Republicans to break ranks and work with Democrats on things without so much fear of Trump. The important thing that I think we need to understand is that if we rely on Republicans doing that purely of their own volition, out of the kindness of their hearts, we're going to end up in a very, very difficult position in which on anything that they really care about, they can simply withhold bipartisanship and block things. So it's going to be really important for the Biden administration, while being as bipartisan as he can be, to also have a very good offense that takes on the special interests behind a lot of this and that motivates public engagement to support their positions and that kind of connects the dots and tries to make sure that the Republicans can't just, and particularly the donors behind them, can't just shoot at the Biden administration and the policies the American people elected it to accomplish from the ridgeline, from artillery posts that we don't bother to harass or expose in any way.
Senator, I worked on campaign finance reform legislation going all the way back to the mid-1980s and worked on it maybe for a decade while I was serving as a counsel in the Senate. We finally passed legislation, and when we did, the Supreme Court basically created workaround in the Citizens United case. How do we proceed given what the Supreme Court has said about campaign finance limitations? How do you get transparency? When I was working on the Hill, I used to experience campaigns where people were sending me materials as a Senate staffer, and I'd call them and say, okay, who's behind this campaign? You're calling yourself the citizens for this, you're citizens against that. And they tell me flat out, we don't have to tell you. It's none of your business who's sending out these materials to every Senate and congressional office. Now, we're being lobbied here by highly funded groups being lobbied in the United States Senate, and they're telling the senators and the senator's staff, we don't have to tell you who's in back of the campaign. Well, what do you do about that?
Well, first of all, we have to engage on it very seriously and very strongly, particularly with the Supreme Court, because to the extent that this Supreme Court is now the Supreme Court that dark money built, a Supreme Court that dark money built is going to have as a very high priority to further protect dark money. Now, as you know, Citizens United only said you could spend all the money you want. It actually baked into the decision that all the money you want spending would have to be transparent spending. And it was only Justice Thomas who dissented from that part of the decision. It was 8-1 in favor of transparency. The problem was that a Supreme Court, the dark money built, has made zero effort in a decade to police the flagrant violations of its transparency predicate that every election has revealed. But under Citizens United, that still gives Congress the capability to say, we are going to legislatively require disclosure. And there's actually a bill that was the center of H.R. 1 and that I've been the advocate for in the Senate that would require the disclosure of contributions over $10,000 and chase them back through the different, you know, you hide behind the shell corporation and the shell corporation hides behind the donor advised trust and the donor advised trust hides behind the 501c4 tax favored entity. And it would drill through all of that until you get the real donor. And if we passed that, two things would change. One, the American public would stop being the unwitting patsy of these big donor interests. They'd actually be able to see and understand the political tableau, the political drama being acted out in front of them. And that's really important. And second, an enormous amount of the big money would just go away. I'd have no statistics for this to back this up, but I would be willing to make a bet that 60% of the so-called unlimited spending under Citizens United evaporates if the transparency requirement of Citizens United were actually enforced, because so much of this tsunami of slime funded by dark money that we've seen is only there because the real proponent knows they can hide their identity.
The Supreme Court seemed to elevate to a constitutional principle people's right to spend whatever they want without disclosure, without anyone being able to track.
Yeah, and here's the danger. The danger is that now 6-3, you had Thomas saying, no, transparency is not a requirement. And since then, you've had three new justices added to the court by this dark money apparatus. So now you're at 4, and you've got Justice Alito, who I think will readily line up with 4 justices for dark money. And now you've got a 5-4 court for a new proposition, which is that not only do you have a constitutional right to spend unlimited amounts of money in elections, but you've got a constitutional right to hide who you are when you do it. And that constitutional right is already being asserted by big dark money powerhouses like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Marathon Petroleum in response to congressional inquiries.
So what the heck are we supposed to do about that?
I think you got to really go to battle. I think if the Supreme Court doesn't think anybody's watching and that they can get away with it, they would happily follow the dark money trail. I think we've got to really spotlight that this is happening. And I think we've got to get to work fast on exposing the dark money stuff so that the American public gets really involved and engaged. You know, a story is actually way better than a statistic. And somebody wrote a $17 million check to pay for the political campaigns to push Justice Kavanaugh through his troubled nomination. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know a lot of people who write $17 million checks. And the only people I do know who write them, I know because their name is on the building at the university that they wrote the $17 million check to build. The idea that you're anonymously writing $17 million checks for political campaigns for a Supreme Court justice is really out of most people's experience. And the prospect that that donor had business before the court is something that I think demands looking into. So the more we can actually do the work of digging through it and sending subpoenas and pushing these inquiries, the more that the story becomes, I think, too sordid, perhaps even for the court that dark money built to countenance.
We don't even know for sure this dark money is coming from people inside the United States. It could be coming from anywhere, Senator.
Absolutely, we do not. And it's one of the great frustrations is that when we try to build defenses against foreign influence coming into our country from Vladimir Putin, for example, we get huge pushback from Republicans because when you tighten up the channels for secret foreign influence, you also tighten up the channels for secret domestic influence. And the Republican Party, through its positions, has basically said, it is more important to us to keep the dark money flowing from the fossil fuel industry and to protect the secrecy than it is to protect America against Vladimir Putin using those exact same techniques to influence our elections.
Senator Whitehouse, do you think it's possible people from the Middle East or from Russia or Asia have put money into our political system over the past few years?
I think it's more than possible. I think it's likely. And at the moment, there's actually an investigation going on into the NRA and into how much Russian money they took to launder through into political activity.
Do you think that if the American public were to learn that large amounts of money went into our political system from Russia or from the Middle East or from China or maybe from all of them, that would change public attitudes?
I do think that. But frankly, I also think that if the American public understood how much of climate denial was a fake, was a constructed artifact built by the fossil fuel industry, that would have a big effect as well, particularly now when you're seeing the climate storm already starting to hit us in the wildfires and in the sea level rise and in the droughts and flooding, all the weather anomalies that we're seeing. You know, farmers and fishermen and people who live close to the land, they get that something has already started going haywire. And when they understand that they were lied to, and they were lied to by a hugely motivated party, the fossil fuel industry, and they were lied to secretly by that hugely motivated party, I think that's a story that, you remember Paul Harvey?
Yep.
You know, they tell the story and at the end, he gives you the last piece that re-illuminates everything you've heard already. I think that becomes a very instructive end of the story in Paul Harvey's terms for the American public.
You know, another part of that, however, is that the social media echo chamber that is being aided by and by not only disinformation from the Republican side, but also from St. Petersburg, Russia, which is still pushing conspiracies and pushing conflicts that, yes, do exist, but they're exacerbated by that system.
As we speak, they're doing it. And it's a technique that our intelligence services watched them use as they built the Soviet Union. And as the Soviet Union fell apart and those countries gained their independence, to try to keep them fractured and economically dependent and even politically aligned, all of that is very established Russian tradecraft. All they did was jump it across the Atlantic and start using it here.
Citizens United, among other things, has left us open to Russian active measures.
It has indeed, a purist would say that Citizens United per se only said you could spend unlimited money. But the fact that the court has been so disinterested in enforcing its transparency rule, it has de facto countenanced big dark money. Nobody cares about hiding their identity when they're limited to a $3,500 contribution. It's just not a thing. When you start making $35 million contributions, that's where you want to hide. And that's how Citizens United was the source, the wellspring for the dark money problem that we have.
One of the top fundraisers in the Republican Party in 2016, Elliot Broidy, he was the deputy chair of Republican National Committee's fundraising, has pled guilty to participating in a conspiracy to violate foreign lobbying laws. And it appears he's cooperating with the Justice Department. It makes me wonder whether his case will begin to reveal some of what took place in 2016 and whether foreigners were involved.
Yep, it could well. The other thing I think that's going to be very interesting is when a Biden administration comes in, how many people in different agencies start coming forward as whistleblowers and to say, you know, hey, boss, I couldn't do anything about this in the last administration because they would have had my head. But there's this file that I scrolled away in my desk, or there's a story I've got to tell you, or I think we'll find that there's been a lot of mischief that has taken place in the agencies of government. And I suspect more than one story will emerge once the Biden administration brings the clear air to vent some of the corrupt influence.
Senator, is your office open to whistleblowers?
We've actually had some experience with whistleblowers, and we know how to protect their confidentiality and send them to the right places so that the information can be vetted and get to the right people when needed.
I think we need to turn to President Obama's recent book, in which he tells an anecdote in which now President-elect Biden was talking to Mitch McConnell about a bill and whether it should be passed or not. And President Obama quotes McConnell as having told Biden, "You must be under the mistaken impression that I care." Well, if we're in a situation in which caring and patriotism and good governance depends on an attitude like that, how do we do anything?
You have to be willing to play some hardball. The Republicans play very rough to get what they want. The Senate looks like a furniture repair shop with smashed everything everywhere from the damage that they've done to norms and practices and policies and rules. And all of that damage was done in the pursuit of political goals that they wished to achieve. And they were pretty remorseless about making sure that they got accomplished. So if we think that we're going to appeal to amity or policy and have that have some effect on Mitch McConnell, we're living in a fairyland. But if there's real pressure on him, then I think he responds like politicians do to pressure. It's one of the reasons I think it's so important that we do everything we can to investigate and expose this dark money apparatus, because this dark money apparatus has been deeply involved in controlling the appointments to the court and the diet that the court is fed. It has been deeply involved in climate denial. Indeed, it's the machinery through which climate denial happens. And it's also deeply, deeply involved in funding Mitch McConnell and all of his big dark money politics, his super PACs and his independent expenditures and all of that. So when there's pressure on that enterprise, which is pressure that we should be putting anyway, because this dark money is toxic to a clean and healthy democracy, then that starts to move the ball. But I think, you know, if you were, I just saw that terrific movie about the Outpost in Afghanistan. You know, if you're taking fire from the ridge lines around you and you're not firing back, somebody needs to be relieved of command. And during the Obama administration, there were a lot of times when we were taking very heavy fire from these dark money outposts and not bothering to fire back. We walked away from cap and trade and getting something done about climate change. We weren't forced to, we just did. We walked away from the fight over dark money at the 501c4s. Indeed, we even adopted the Republican narrative about what had taken place. We didn't make it a teachable moment and we didn't draw the line. And we opened the doors to floods of dark money that then were used to batter and smash our candidates. So you just got to have a sense of when you need to stick up for yourself and what's right and what's wrong. And when it's right and helps you stick up for yourself, go do it.
It would be a lovely thing to see enough people in the Senate stick up for the people they've been elected to serve.
Yeah. And I think it's a totally appropriate inquiry, for instance, to ask the Heartland Institute, which is a phony baloney fossil fuel front group, who paid to have them send 200,000 fake science textbooks to teachers all around the country. Think how much money it costs to write, print, publish, and mail 200,000 fake textbooks. Somebody funded that. I think moms all across the country whose kids' teachers got that phony textbook, you know, another Paul Harvey moment. Interesting. Who paid for that? What's the end of that story? So I think that exposing this apparatus that is busily corrupting our democracy in what is basically one of the biggest covert operations ever run, just happens to be run by domestic industry against our country, is very much in our country's national interest and happily also coincides with our political interest.
The question is whether the Senate's going to be able to do that when there's such a close partisan divide about what should happen next, when the American public itself seems divided about what direction it wants the country to go. I remember when I was working as a Senate counsel in the 80s and 90s, when we had things that looked like good government things, things that people really should support, but where there was a private or commercial interest, a business interest that didn't want it to happen, we would have 52, 53, 54, 56, 58 votes, enough to get it passed. But you could see a few of those votes, usually just enough, get peeled off after the private interests would work the territory. And I worry about that going ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think some of this information coming forward can help the public decide which direction it wants the country to go. And even if the Senate is blockaded, the House is in Democratic hands and has subpoena power. And the Biden administration has the ability to appoint presidential commissions, like the one that looked into the Challenger disaster, to try to figure out where things went wrong and why. And the departments of government have their own ability to ask questions and try to get answers. And I think if that's used in a proper way, we've got a very good shot, even with a tangled up Senate, to try to get to the bottom of a lot of the mischief that has been perpetrated in our country.
It's interesting that Heartland, whom you identified, it's the Heartland Institute, which defines its mission as advocating free market policies, started out wanting a free market in tobacco.
Yeah, it's one of many groups that started as a front group for tobacco. And then the tobacco thing was revealed to be a fraud, as you'll recall. And in fact, the United States Department of Justice won a civil case against the tobacco industry, calling their operation fraud and getting a court order for them to knock off the fraudulent communications. And that left high and dry the tobacco health denial operation with no client left, just at the time that climate science was starting to show that fossil fuel had a similar problem with its product. And so fossil fuel moved right in and filled the vacant tobacco space in all these front groups, and some of them are still going.
Senator, thanks very much for giving us all of this time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Thanks. If there's one lasting thing I left with you, I hope it's the analogy of what the, I suspect, primarily the fossil fuel industry has done in our democracy to a covert operation of a covert information op of this sort run by hostile nations.